Good morning, everybody. It's my son's birthday today, March 9th, 2021. Okay, happy birthday, Ben. All right, I'm Larry Jacobs. This is 3K12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We've got an old friend back on the show today, Dr. Amy Sickle, who currently is the AASA National is the lead superintendent for the AASA National Superintendent Certification Program. We're going to talk about that. And she's a past president of AASA, and she's also the retired superintendent near Philadelphia over in Abington, Pennsylvania, near where I used to teach, okay, in Cheltenham. So it's a pleasure to have Amy here. We reconnected a few weeks ago, and now we're back, and we're going to talk to her today. So a big thank you over to Jimmy Minicello over at AASA, who helped me set up the show with Amy. Always appreciate that, Jimmy. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, the American Consortium for Equity in Education. Join with us. It's free to educators. We want your voice heard. For equity, if you go over there to ace-ed.org, which you should, ace-ed.org, okay, you'll see a big icon for our magazine cover, Equity and Access. It is an excellent magazine. It's an online journal. Go over there, read it. Trust me, you will like it. Share the whole thing with your colleagues. All our podcasts are over there, etc., plus a heck of a lot of other good information all about equity and education, pre-K-12, again, ace-ed.org. Okay, Larry Jacobs here talking to Circling. There we go, Amy Sickle, to Montgomery County folks originally. How you doing there, Amy?
Oh, pleasure to be with you, Larry, and to reconnect again, though you are an arch rival from the Cheltenham School District.
I know that.
As it pertains
I know
to the
that.
Abington School District.
How long were you superintendent over in Abington, which is great?
I was superintendent for 18 years, but I was a lifer. My career was only in the Abington School District for 42 years. Starting
I didn't
as a counselor.
That. It's amazing.
Yeah,
you started when you were 7. You started when you were 7 years old. That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm only 37 now. So
that's
like
incredible.
What a career.
Congratulations. Well, that's amazing.
Thank you, Larry.
Cool that you worked. Amy, you worked. I didn't realize that you worked your whole way up from guidance counselor to superintendent in one school district.
In one school district, and Larry,
wow.
That's where you can make a difference in education. When it comes to equity, when it comes to serving all kids. You have a team and a board of school directors and a community that are committed to goals that meet the needs of kids, and they don't flip-flop with a new leader coming in and out.
That's
or
right.
More importantly, a new board being voted in and out. So in Abington, we were able to make a great difference, and they're continuing to do that in Abington because they have a long legacy of hiring from within. So the superintendent who replaced me, who's a great guy, is continuing with the passions that we've had before.
And to 18 years as superintendent, think about that.
18 long years.
But that's incredible. That, you know, we always heard, I think it's changing a little bit these days, but we always heard, the typical tenure for a superintendent is 3 years. Maybe they last 5 and that's the end of it.
And
18 years.
And it's less than that.
Oh my
and
God.
It's less than that now, Larry, because of the pandemic. People are, unfortunately dropping like flies. Because it's
such a tough
time in the world and education that people are leaving.
And by the way, I live up in Maine now, and I'm a Philly boy to begin with. I love hearing your Philly accent, which you don't even know you have, but I hear it. It just sounds great. Okay, it just sounds great. I got to tell you, music to my ears. All right, and it's just actually, what's funny? My wife is from right up 611 from Doylestown. So there you go, from Plumstead.
Oh, okay. So you're both from here.
Oh, yeah. We're both from here. Incredible. All right. I went to Westchester.
Yep.
She went to Penn State. The old story, Amy. And by the way, I just have to reminisce for a second. Amy and I have one little connection. Okay. It's a little more personal. And although husband's name's Buzz, right? It's Buzz is your husband, right?
Right. My husband's Buzz. Mm-hmm.
And I must have missed him somehow, but your brother-in-law, his brother, was a student of mine. And I know that he's had a very, very fine life. Etc. Lives in Colorado, and he'd attest that all to his soccer coach in ninth grade. Would I be correct?
You got it. Gordon
That's what
Sickle,
he says.
My brother-in-law, my husband's younger brother. He lives in Colorado. He's a cowboy. Works hard out there, and he does attribute it to the soccer skills that you taught him in ninth grade.
I can only
you
imagine.
You coached him to success.
I can only imagine. It was my pleasure to give him what I could in that short period
right.
of time. And I'm surprised. I don't know Buzz. I must have just missed him somehow.
Yeah,
okay?
He was the year he had him in
too.
School.
Yeah,
yep,
well,
he did.
Well, unbelievable. Is that school still there? Is EP still there? I don't even
EP
know.
EP is still there. It's no longer, it may be not a middle school, like I'm not really sure, you know, a five, six school right now. I'm not really sure how they've reconfigured, but it's still there. And the superintendent in Cheltenham's a good friend. He's a great guy, too, Wagner Marseille.
I don't know him, but that's wonderful. I'd love to talk to him one of these days. That's great. And by the way, just so everybody knows that I'm actually taught and lived in Elkins Park, okay? Elkins Park spelled backwards is Stinkley Crap, just so everybody knows that.
Oh, boy. You know all the things.
Yeah, that's important. If you live there, you got to know that Elkins Park spelled backwards is Stinkley Crap. Okay, so we just move
there
right on
go.
From there. There you go. Amy, it's great. I can't tell you how great it is to have you here. And I want to ask you a question. You started off as a counselor, okay? And that's an interesting jump to become an administrator and a superintendent. What prompted that? This whole thing is rooted in your love of being a superintendent and administrator. What prompted you back then to move from counseling to administration, which is not that common a move, I don't think?
It's not common at all, Larry, and it's a great question. I came to Abington, and I was in a PhD program at University of Pennsylvania in psychology. So very quickly in Abington, I was promoted to be a psychologist, which I just loved working with kids, and kids who had social and emotional needs, kids who had academic needs. It was really a great fit for me, and I did that for about 7 years in Abington. And then, Larry, you probably remembered that Abington went from a school district of 12,000 to a school district of about 6,000, 5,000 was the lowest it ever was. It really shrunk in half.
I didn't know that.
And when that happened, when it happened, they began to combine schools and to close buildings. So they made what was known then as North Campus a very large junior high school, which became a 789 building because the high school was on the other side of the campus, so the ninth graders could walk over to the high school if needed. And they created a structure where they needed a lot more administrators in this building because it was going to become such a large building, and they asked me to be a guidance chair. So I kind of moved in a very nice, easy way into administration and became the supervisor of the guidance department and really worked on things with the team there to really make some changes. We took counseling and psychology from working with those that were desperately in need to working with children preventively to avoid need. And it was really a big part of flipping the thought process, shifting the dynamics to thinking about meeting the social emotional needs of kids. And when we started to do that, it really became something that the upper administration took a look at. And I kind of got one of those famous little taps on the shoulder from a person who was my mentor, who was the assistant superintendent at the time, and said to me, you know, why don't you go back and finish your certification to become a superintendent? I said, for what purpose? I love what I'm doing. I have a PhD in psychology. I don't have a degree in administration. They said, oh, go back to Penn. They'll make you take a couple of courses. Get it done. So he kind of tapped me, encouraged me to do it. And lo and behold, within the next 5 or 6 years, I became the director of pupil services and then the assistant superintendent and then the superintendent.
Boom.
And you couldn't be right, because when you look at even the research on the career paths of superintendents, the vast majority are men, about almost 74% are men from high school positions where they were coaches and high school principals, versus women, which is only about 26% at this point, are from elementary positions with even less the career path that I chose.
My favorite story about that, do you know Eddie Manusak? Do you know that name?
Sure I do.
Eddie is Dundee Community Schools in Michigan. He's the superintendent.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Eddie was a kindergarten teacher.
That's right, and he does a lot of work with AASA and early learning.
Oh,
so he's doing
sure
a great job
does.
With that.
Mm-hmm. He sure as heck does, but it's interesting the way people's paths take them to the superintendency. And, you know, it's really interesting because And you mentioned social emotional. By the way, when you started talking about, I do remember them. I hadn't thought about it for years. Remember all those? I remember all those school consolidation and closings.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Years and so many years ago now. Okay, I forgot about that. When you said it, it dawned on me. But as you were talking, it was ringing a bell.
Yeah, and now 30 years later. Yeah, now 30 years later, Abington is building again because they're pushing over 9,000 kids. It's on its way back up, which is very typical as communities seed and reseed and, you know, et cetera. As you go through that 13 years of kids in school, then the community gets quiet for a while, and then it reseeds and moves back. It's very interesting from an ethnographic point of view.
It really is like an accordion squeeze box, up and down, up and down, up and down. You never know where it's going to go. It's really interesting. And all those statistics you just gave are amazing. And I'm surprised that only 25% of superintendents are women now. Is that what you just said?
Yep, only 25%. And the vast majority of them are they're sprinkled throughout the country, but the vast majority are in the East and the West Coast in the more highly populated areas. What's rather unfortunate and a big drive of both AASA and the nation is the number of superintendents of color, which is probably closer to like 8%. And we want to see that change because it's really important that, you know, for equity purposes and social injustice and meeting the needs of children, we really need to change the face of what schools look like.
We're working on it, but it's hard to do it. And you brought up, when you were just talking a few minutes ago, you brought up years and years and years ago, you used the term social-emotional learning. But I'm just curious, and I was asking somebody else about this, we really weren't calling it social emotional learning. I don't think till about 10, 12 years ago. Maybe I'm wrong.
Right.
Okay. When you noticed that 30 years ago, what did you call it?
For lack of better terms, it was a preventative guidance model. It was a proactive guidance model. It was talking about kids' social and emotional health without using that terminology to make sure that they were happy, productive, capable citizens, rather than waiting the old model in both counseling and school psychology. You know, you wait until the person gets really depressed and treat them.
It's reactive
and exactly. So that was kind of the new way of looking at things that was important to me, and that's what really changed, you know, in the country over the last 20 or so years.
Right place, right time, Amy Sickle. Always right place, right time, Amy Sickle.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And now you're leading through AASA, the National Superintendent Certification Program. And you alluded to this a few minutes ago. You said, you know, there's some superintendents are just leaving the job. It's so crazy right now. Take the retirement and run, if I may. Okay, cut it down to the chase there. Okay, so talk about the National Superintendent Certification Program and what are its goals, okay, and why should a superintendent, and again, you've mentioned this as we were preparing the show, you know, somebody who's been in the job a long time, why do they need it, and what is it for people who maybe want to become superintendents? Just talk about it in the details like that. Go ahead, Amy.
Okay. It's my pleasure to do that because you know that's what my passion is now and what I'm working on. Lead superintendent for AASA's National Superintendent Program, and I often say to people, I'm not a retired superintendent. I'm a repurposed superintendent. To work with my colleagues across
the
country.
You're a recycled superintendent.
Repurposed.
Okay,
I've got lots of purpose. There you go.
Go for it.
And essentially, the National Superintendent Certification Program is for either superintendents. You must be a sitting superintendent, so we'll talk about aspiring in a moment. You must be a sitting superintendent within your first 7 or so years, or a superintendent that really wants to work on, quote, refreshing and retuning their skills. And what we do is we talk about topics. We have a defined curriculum that's aligned with what's called the Professional Standards for Educational Leaders. And there are a lot of topics you would think about: transformational learning, instructional leadership, operation and management, board relations, professional ethics, social-emotional learning, engagement of families, communication skills. Topics that you would think of would be typical in a curriculum professional development program. But what is the difference with the ASA program is two things that really stand out for me. One, it is a program totally developed by and led by active seasoned sitting superintendents. So we work on the program, we teach the program, and we sit with our colleagues face-to-face, other sitting superintendents. No one else can say that because, as you know, whether you look at college courses or other things, it's not superintendents to superintendents. The second thing is we have the ability to pivot on a dime to what is the relevant topic today. So last March when this pandemic hit, the program that I lead was a face-to-face program where you met four times a year for 3 days. Well, we weren't going to meet face-to-face. So we pivoted, we did it virtually, we demonstrated online learning on how it should be done for other educators and for children in school. So we have the capabilities and the knowledge base and people we work with to demonstrate how you do online learning for children, for other educators in a way that's interactive, dynamic, still offers some of those kinds of things, and we make sure it's relevant. So, for example, one of the first topics is professional ethics. So the topic not only is professional ethics, but it's professional ethics during a pandemic. It's professional ethics with, you know, all that has occurred with social injustice in the next year. We make it relevant to the topic today. So we do a lot of what we call problems of practice, where we chew on key topics of reentry and health issues and things like that. And people love working with their colleagues across the country, because we run three cohorts, East, Midwest, and West. Midwest doesn't mean you're from the Midwest. You could be from the East Coast or the West Coast. They join whenever they choose to join. And you network with colleagues across the country. You make critical friends for life, people that you can count on forever, both your colleagues in the program, both your assigned mentor in the program, your lead teacher in the program, your lead superintendent in the program. We become a cohort that works together, this group of like 20 to 30. They're aligned, and they become connected like you can't believe. So the reasons people join is for exactly what I'm laying out: the curriculum, the collegiality, the networking, the relevant online curriculum. It's amazing because we thought during this past year of the pandemic, people are going to have trouble doing this, you know, from both time, budget, et cetera. The last two cohorts are the two biggest ones I've opened up, the one we opened up in the East and the one we just opened up in Midwest. People are still coming because they see the need to connect with other like-minded superintendents, which gets to the second part of your question. The program I lead is for sitting superintendents. If you're an aspiring superintendent, ASA has an entire ASA Aspiring Superintendents Academy. And they have a blended one that's online. They have a one that's more face-to-face, as my program is, though it's, you know, pivoted to virtual. They have one for female leaders. They have one for Latino, Latina aspiring leaders. So we have a whole nother group of people that lead those programs. And frankly, I should get Gail Pletnik, who is a repurposed superintendent, to talk to you about the aspiring program at some point.
I would love that anytime. We could set that up.
I can
today, later,
and
set it.
So can Jimmy.
Yeah, let's do that. Let me, on that note, let me ask you this: how's the pipeline? Okay, and I know you're the sitting superintendent person, but how's the pipeline? Because you said how many are leaving. You know, and it's, by the way, it's the same with teachers. Okay, it's not just superintendents. There's been a lot of resignations through the board. Well, we don't forget to do that today, but go ahead. How's the pipeline?
The pipeline, you know, it's interesting when you talk about it. It's not as robust as it needs to be. So there's clearly a need to recruit and involve more people in it. But there's still a lot of people that say, I want to do this. This is my passion. I'm interested in being a school superintendent, and we'll work on it. But it is a tough time, and it's also a tough time because people are retiring in larger groups than they ever did before. So you're seeing a larger percent leave, so therefore that hits the pool. So it's, you know, it's a tough time.
It is a tough time. And I just want to ask you a little question. It's a little bit off the wall, but I just want to ask this. Have they ever looked, and I'm thinking in terms of business, you know, business brings in a CEO who has experience as a business leader. They may not necessarily be from that particular field. In other words, a guy
right.
may jump from insurance to healthcare, just as an example, or something
right.
like that.
Yep.
All right. But
I know where you're going.
Yeah, within education, obviously, everybody has to have an education degree. And obviously, I know education is important and all that, but
yep.
you have a cabinet underneath you. And I don't know how AASA feels about this, but is there
sure.
any talk of bringing in folks from the outside, if I may?
Sure.
I've never heard of that.
And,
I don't know. But
That has happened. And please know that the way to the superintendency is state-driven. As you know, education is managed by states, not by the federal government. Federal government can have some oversight as it relates to federal funding, but they really don't have any oversight as it relates to day-to-day schooling. So now you have to look at the 50 states and to see what their rules and regulations are. So, for example, my state, Pennsylvania, does permit active business managers and active school attorneys and active directors of human resources. So people who have had, I believe it's 5 years, but I don't want me to quote you on that have had 5 years within education in that area. And as you know, a business manager could come from healthcare. A human resources person
exactly.
could come from
human resources.
Yep, so they work internally within a school district, and they have the ability to then apply for superintendencies. So it's kind of a bridge. Yeah, it's a bridge type of program so that you don't just jump from being a hospital administrator to running a school district. You kind of have a pathway with which to do it. There are some other states that permit exactly what you're saying, which is, you know, they will grant an intermediate interim or a temporary certificate and let people do it. Now, that's the process. What you and I need to think about is the fidelity and whether it works. And school districts are very interesting institutions. One, we're not a for-profit company. Our product is meeting the needs of children. So
right.
sometimes you spend money in ways that may be different than the bottom line would be in a business. So that's important that we look at that. Number two, our resources, the vast majority of them are spent on teachers, and that's where it belongs. It should be with what children need to have their needs met. Most of the time it's by having them be, you know, taught very well by teachers. So you can't look at the bottom line in terms of, you know, profit loss by where you spend the majority of your money.
Right.
So I think it's important
right.
that people have some connection to education and
mm-hmm.
understand what's going on. Military people that have become superintendents across the country, because as I shared with you, each state is different. I'm not opposed, but I think it's important that they be integrated into understanding what education is about. For
Absolutely.
Example, yeah, some of the best superintendents have a really good handle on operations and management, as I did, operations, management, technology. And that doesn't mean I need to know everything. It means that I needed to surround myself with people that know everything.
Right.
So making
yeah.
sure you have a great business
yeah.
manager, a great technology person. But what you really need to know a lot about is how to make sure that kids are served well. And that's instructional leadership. That's knowing how to hire the right teachers. That's knowing how to make sure that you have the most relevant curriculum, whether it be digitized or, you know, hard copy or a combination of above. That's making sure that your goals are always met. So those kinds of things are the things that you get by being in education that aren't directly transferable. And AASA's position on this would be it's state-driven. And if you're going to be a superintendent and your state lets you do it, we're going to help you become the best superintendent you can
good.
Be. So if you're a
That's
sitting
good.
Superintendent and you came from industry and you want to be in the National Superintendent Certification Program, as long as you have sitting in the job or have a contract to start the job shortly, we're going to invite you to be in.
Thank you, Amy. That was well explained. I got to tell you that. Right now, with school districts coming back, a lot of them are coming back. There was just an article today in the New York Times about it. Okay. As you look at it, as you talk to your colleagues, and as you run the superintendent certification program, what's the top priority now?
Sure.
now? What's the
sure.
top priority?
I want to say there's a couple. Safety first. So you really got to look at the metrics in the community. What's going on in Abington is going to be different to what's going on in Doylestown and different to what's going on in Philadelphia. You got to look at the metrics in the community spread, what that school district can handle, the air infiltration system in that school district. So safety and all the parameters that go along with that. The second thing is, and it's just as important as the first, is the needs of the community. It's very interesting, up until recently when we did surveys, and I don't mean we, AASA, when superintendents did surveys of their parents and their guardians, it was almost a 50-50 split of 50% during this pandemic, I want to keep my kid home, 50% I want my kid back in school, whether it be hybrid or whatever. In the last few weeks, with the onset of the vaccinations and knowing that teachers are going to be vaccinated, that's slowly tipping towards more in school. And some school districts are now seeing 60 to 70% want to return. And I think it's important you get a vibe on what your families can do. And the thing that I think some of our parents don't have a full handle on is when you're fortunate in Abington that has a whole bunch of new schools with great air systems, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
They can do it. But when you talk about some of the communities that have aging buildings that don't have that, it's not as easy to return your kids to school. So those are the things that I think are most on, you know, both parents and superintendents' mind, how to, you know, during this March time frame, to get the kids back for this last one-third of the school year so that they don't miss it. You know, they've been out a year, many of them, so that they come back. And then the second thing is to make sure that we're ready for September. And I just hope with the rollout of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine this past week that that's really going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, and then hopefully we can go back to whatever normal is. Do you think it'll go back? Will it go back to the way it was, Amy? What are your superintendents saying?
I think, and so do the superintendents, it'll never go back to the quote normal. It's going to be a new normal because what we've learned is that some kids really thrive in online virtual learning. Some kids didn't thrive at all. So why not continue to have that option? You know, there were school districts across the country, Abington being one of them, that always had a virtual offering. I think that virtual offering is going to become a mandate. So that, I think, is going to change, and parents are going to have choice. I don't know if there will be a continued choice of hybrid, but that's also an option that could happen too. I think the other thing that's going to happen is we really learned how to integrate our technology better. Teachers had to learn how to teach online and do things online, and that's going to change in terms of the learnings that occurred as a function of this. Schooling could change in terms of timing. You know, I think what we've learned on the secondary level that kids can do well with more apprenticeships and internships and things like that, and I think as a function of this, that might open up. So I think you're going to see a lot of the innovations that we talked about in the last 5 to 10 years become a reality.
That's
a good thing that occurred from this pandemic.
Yeah, this mess.
So
there is a
we don't think it's going back to the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going back to the same thing either.
And, you know, let me ask you, from the superintendent's point of view, and knowing what we know now with the pandemic and considering all the things you just said, okay, as you talk, I don't know if you do per se, but as we talk and learn from teacher training institutions, are we putting pressure on them? And I think superintendents should be the ones who do this because they are going to hire their graduates. Are they forcing the colleges to change the way they teach so teachers are prepared to teach in a post-pandemic world?
Sure. I think that's so important. And yeah, and AASA sits on a couple of college, university prep programs related committees. We have a pretty big influence in the community college area, and we want to have a good influence in the teacher prep program because I think there are an awful lot of new learnings that occurred. So I think that's something that's really important, and I do think that post-secondary education, if they don't see the silver lining from the pandemic and learn as K-12 has learned, they're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah,
so
they're in big trouble. They're in big trouble. They better change things if they want to get out of big trouble, okay, is the way I look at it. And then coming down the pike, they're already at the end of the pike. And they got to change things.
And the other thing I want to share with you, Larry, is not everything's a silver lining. During this pandemic, the issues of social injustice and equity for children became paramount. You know, if you didn't have Wi-Fi at home and a device in your child's hand, or if you had one device to share among a family of four to six, you were in bad shape. This has been discussed as a national problem. You know, there was wonderful stuff going on with E-rate and bringing Wi-Fi into communities that over the past 4 years kind of fell on deaf ears and wasn't seen as an important social issue. Now it's paramount again. And it's really important that we deal with what we term the digital divide. And so there's things that relate to the new normal that we can't go back to business as usual. And we got to make sure all kids are connected, have access to Wi-Fi, have a device that works besides just a phone. They need, you know, a Chromebook or a computer, an iPad, whatever is the device. They got to have these resources. You can't have, you know, one kid have a pair of sneakers and another kid not. And it just doesn't work in PE class.
You can have that, but you can't have them play on the same basketball court, okay? We want them all on the same basketball court, equal with the same amount of opportunity. It's that simple, okay? And we, my standing joke is we kicked the can down the road for so long, we finally got to the end of the road and it was a cliff, okay? And we all fell
and
off
so
together, you know?
So we've got to look at, you know, like it, at least it's a silver lining from the vantage point that it's put it in front of all of our eyes. It needs to be dealt with. You know,
you can't go to school by your zip code. You can't. Yeah, thank you.
Education by zip code
is absurd in this country. It is absurd. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, I have to ask, those same kids that you were describing, or at least a lot of them, okay, who don't have the proper internet and broadband and all that at home, and lost maybe a year of learning, okay, which is not good to be, not good from the get-go, and certainly not good, et cetera. They also, a lot of them are people of color, okay, and there's been a lot of social justice stuff over the past year, obviously, George Floyd, and to be on a tail, you can go right down that list.
Yep.
They see all that, and it's made school districts, I hope, more aware of this, and that creates its own controversy. Okay, are the superintendents dealing with that? Do you see that happening?
Oh, absolutely, and it's hard to do from the top down.
Yeah, go ahead, but talk about that. I would encourage.
AASA has done a wonderful series that started prior to last summer on equity in education. There is a wonderful a listing of resources on the AASA website where we've had educators from across the country talk about exactly the topics you're talking about. And this cannot go away. This cannot be swept under the rug one more time. It is important that equity issues be addressed with, and that, you know, all kids, you know, receive a fair and equitable education.
Yeah.
It relates to both issues of race and issues of socioeconomics. You know, it's just not fair anymore that if you come from a family that is underserved, that you get less than when you go to a school district who can serve their children well. Something's got to change. And we've been talking about the zip code issue in education forever.
Yeah. For how long?
And hopefully this pandemic just put it out there and made it so clear, because you look at the urban centers across the country and there are wonderful superintendents in the urban centers, but they don't have the resources that you have in other school districts, and it sure made it tough.
I went through Philadelphia Public Schools K-12. Okay. And look at Bill Height, who's Bill's still there, right? In Philly, right?
Bill's still there and he's a wonderful leader.
Yeah, he is. He's a great guy, and look what he has to fight every day of the week. I mean,
it's brutal. That's right.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Yep.
It's just why. One last question. We got to go in a few minutes. How many superintendents are in the superintendent, or how many have gone through over the past year? However you want to answer that. How many can you handle?
I do want to answer that. We have over 300 alumni at this point. And we have another, like, 80 that are presently in the program now. We've also opened what we call our state affiliates. So we not only have the three national programs, we have a program in process in Pennsylvania, in Arizona, in Minnesota, and we're talking to a whole bunch of other states. So we're trying to, one of my goals is to expand the program across the country to provide access, because not everybody can sign up and travel to a national program. So we're trying to do that as well. And we want to get as many people as we can to work with us on the issues that you and I have been talking about for this morning.
Yeah, it has to happen. And everybody, just go to AASA.org. I mean, most of you listening know this. But also, Amy, set me up. What was the person's name who's running the aspiring superintendents thing?
Gail Pletnik. I can do that. If Jimmy's on the call, we'll get that together for you.
Set me up, Jimmy. You too, Amy, all right? This is great.
You got it.
You're doing it. Amy, you're so good at what you do. Okay, it's unbelievable.
Oh, thank you, Larry.
It's unbelievable.
Call me again. You know I'd love to talk to you, and we can do another update.
You're always welcome here. You're always welcome here, young lady. And tell Gordy I said hi. And tell Buzz, even though
I don't know Buzz,
I know him by brother. Okay, 60 years ago. So tell him I said hello. Okay.
We'll do that. Take care.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Amy Sickle, everybody, who was the superintendent at Abington, PA. Okay, and it was a past president of AASA, and now is the lead superintendent of the superintendent certification program from AASA, which I can guarantee you is a damn good program. Okay, so we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Hope you enjoyed the show. I certainly did. She is really something. Okay, so please check it all out if you're interested in all this stuff over at AASA.org, and please check out where we are over in Equity. Amy was talking about that over at ace-ed.org. That's our consortium where the industry and educators meet to get equity moving right along. Okay, I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Hey, thanks for listening.